you walk in, they show you the mark when no one's there, and like, okay, cool, you know where you're gonna stand, and then you wait for a half hour.
And the doors open.
And then they sit you in front of the doors. And the guy's like, all right, quiet on the set. And they're like, cool, guys, when the doors open, you walk through, you hit your mark, do your pitch, and then we're live. So don't screw it up.
Yeah.
And so we're like, okay, cool. We're sitting there like fist bump and like we're just standing and standing. And I'm like, you know, the adrenaline is just like pumping, dude. Yeah. You're in front of the doors in Shark Tank.
The iconic hallway. You know, it's like you're right there in an air hangar that's massive. That was like a city. Now all of a sudden it's dead quiet.
Yeah, dead quiet. And I'm just like, I'm going to go through my lines and say it in my head. My mind is blank.
This episode is brought to you by WeWork. Being able to work remotely is a game changer. You don't have to spend time and money commuting, and often you can work from anywhere in the world. But it does have its downsides. It can be pretty lonely working from home, and if you're off traveling, it can be really hard to find somewhere to sit down and work without a sticky table. That's where WeWork comes in. WeWork is co-working space with offices all over the world. Fast Wi-Fi, free tea and coffee, and loads of desk space and meeting rooms, so you always have somewhere to get your work done, whether that's alone or with friends and co-workers. And with WeWork On Demand, you can book co-working space by the day and meeting rooms by the hour at locations all around the world. Thanks to our friends at WeWork, you can get 50% off your next co-working space booking. Head to we.co/Brian50, that's B-R-Y-A-N 50. Download the WeWork app and enter code B-R-Y-A-N 50, that's Brian 50, to get 50% off your next booking. Here we go.
I'm Ryan.
And I'm Mike.
And we're the founders of Plunge.
What's up, guys? Thank you for having me out to your world headquarters in an undisclosed location, upper north side of Sacramento.
Great to have you here, man.
My pleasure. I'm super impressed. I mean, I didn't expect to walk out on the floor and see like a full-blown manufacturing plant. I mean, that's my interpretation of it.
Mm-hmm.
I usually ask my guests, how did you get this job?
Well, that's a big question.
I'm curious where you start with that, Mike.
My head goes to the garage and COVID.
And my head actually jumps 5 years before.
Sure.
When I met Mike. And I think both are imperative to the story. So Mike and I both, before this, started float therapy centers. Sensory deprivation tank centers. There weren't many in Northern California. Mike opened one in San Francisco. I walked in his first month he had been open. I hadn't opened mine yet. I walked in and said, hey, we're going to be friends. So we spent the next 5 years just developing a really strong friendship and, you know, did some projects together outside of business that we got to know each other and just developed like super core friendships. That's why I consider it as like the seeds of Plunge were being planted. And yeah, once we officially launched in the garage, it was like the fastest thing I've ever been a part of, but it was like 5 years of real roots being planted before, you know, we went on the biggest sprint of our life.
The biggest surprise for me, I think, and for a lot of people who are listening and watching, is that this company is basically 3 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And the numbers you shared with me, spoiler alert, gross revenue right around 100 million. 3 years, 100 million. I mean, it's like, let's unpack how you got here. That's a huge number. Just walking out on the showroom floor or the manufacturing floor, you can see what's happening, the breadth and the depth. But like, let's take it back in the chronology 4 years ago with sensory deprivation or wherever you were. Where was your head at? What were you thinking?
I was just trying to run. I have three locations in the Bay and we had some debt I was trying to pay off. Things were kind of like looking better and better and things were good. And then COVID hit. And that was a shock to the system and didn't know what to do. Very confusing. I got like sick for a week because it was just so much. Do I have to pay employees? What's going on? I had an employee tell me, oh, we're going to be closed till July. And I like scoffed and like rolled my eyes. I'm like, are you nuts? That would never happen.
There's no way.
Well, that doesn't make any sense. You know, we closed for a year, you know? So I think by May, I got really sick of playing video games and was like, I was like, oh, this is going to go long. I need something to do.
Is this May 2020?
This is May 2020. Yeah. And I had been cold plunging in an ice chest freezer for a couple years. And wanted a better solution. Nothing was out there. Just did the Google search. Everything was like 10, 11, 12, 15K. Looked like it was handmade, kind of could be sold on Etsy. Really cool, but like didn't look scalable. Yeah. Didn't look
weighed like 1,000 pounds.
Yeah. Metal, wood, all that type of stuff. And I was like, man, how is there nothing that's just like, you know, like a hot tub, but a cold one, right? Like there's nothing. And so I just hit up my dad, flew out to Arizona. He's a DIY guy and he loved that I wanted to like build some stuff with him. And
he's like on it.
I actually connected with the owners of one of the cold plunge companies. They're burners. And I knew a friend of a friend. I went out with my dad cause they were in Arizona as well. We visited Morosco.
And went
in their cold plunge, and it was funny because the guy, one of the Morosco guys, like sold my dad on cold therapy. He's like, oh my god, like this is amazing, Mike. I'm like, I just told you the same thing an hour ago, and you just like didn't really get it.
Yeah,
but that's fine.
In his defense though, like the Morosco, like all wood, like hand carved looking plunge is a hell of a lot better than a freezer.
Oh my god. It's really cool because they actually cool the metal itself and it creates ice. It's this really amazing invention. And they were doing that whole thing. And so me and my dad just got like a metal trough and we started doing really dirty prototypes. And then I went home and I started looking up freestanding acrylic bathtubs. Mm-hmm. And the top results were this company that was based in Woodland. So half an hour from my house, hit them. I just drove out there and they had some damaged tubs for $100. And I'm like, cool, throw it in my van, took it home, built the prototype. And I was like, okay, cool. I'm going to make one of these and put it into my reboot spa, take out a float tank, sell that thing on Craigslist, put in a, you know, infrared sauna, and I'll put in this cold plunge and I'll have a new modality at my spa. And this will be like a net win during this COVID time. And then I think like once I got the tub to a certain point, I was like, I think I put it in my spa and I thought, huh, I could, COVID's still happening. Like, why don't I build a couple more?
Yeah.
Sent an email and sold two more to some people I knew through my community at Reboot. And they were like so incredibly excited to get this cold plunge. One guy had a bottle of champagne for me. You know, one guy canceled his Morosco order and we delivered it to his SF apartment. And
what'd you sell it for?
This was 3K.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the Morosco is probably over 10K, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. This was a significant savings.
Yeah. And they wanted to support me and it was really cool. And then I, you know, didn't want to start a company by myself again. I had told myself I will not do that. And my top pick by far was Ryan because we had worked together and we were like incredibly close friends, super crazy, similar backgrounds and values. And at first I invited Ryan into the garage and showed him an early prototype and was like, let's sell these. And he was kind of like, huh. Like I expected him to say yes. I was like, oh, this is kind of a no.
Okay. What were you thinking? What was really going through your mind?
Well, there was two paths going. Like, again, my personal life was kind of up in the air. Okay. Like I had, you know, I sold or Cat Floats closed down. We had just got it back open. I had moved into an RV to save money. I was going through a breakup. Like my life was up in the air. Not the most pinnacle moment to launch a company.
Yeah. Up in the air or in shambles.
In shambles. Like. Yeah. But, you know, the next piece to that was I saw the product and Mike was just kind of laying out like, hey, he was just stating what's possible.
Yeah.
As opposed to this is the product we're going to market with. Once you'll learn in this, like I'm not the product guy. Mike's the product guy. So I looked at that and there was still like, it was pretty crude. There was still like aluminum foil on some spots. Like he was testing stuff.
It looked like MacGyver put it together. Probably.
100%.
Exactly. Yeah.
It was that. And I didn't really grasp that. And so I was like, I don't think so. Or I was just like, it wasn't a no, but it definitely wasn't a yes.
You weren't blown away. Yeah.
Kind of stepped away, you know, I think 4 weeks later, not even that long. He was like, hey, come back over. And he comes back over and I see the product and it was like totally different. Like he had cleaned it up. He presented it to me.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's when I got it. I was like, oh, this, you know what you're doing. Like you can take and carry this product forward.
Past what you see there.
Past what I see. He knows what he's doing here because I didn't. Mm-hmm. And so that was like the exciting, like, got it. Yeah. Okay. I see who you are. I see who you are. And I see where this is product's going. Let's do it.
Between that time, did you kind of write him off? Like, okay, maybe he's not the guy.
No. Well, I had asked some other people, like, are you interested? And thankfully they were not interested.
It wasn't a no. It was like, you just kept me engaged, like kind of up. I'm having a convo with this guy. And it wasn't like, there was never any threats of like, I'm going somewhere else. It was just open communication. I was being honest to where I was.
Yeah.
He was being honest, the process. And
I'm curious, like what you saw in Ryan. Like, I mean, obviously you saw in Ryan what you saw in the tub. You looked past, you know, he was in transition. He's living in an RV, you know, whatever his situation was. But like in some ways he was kind of like that first tub. He's going to be amazing at some point.
Ryan's strength is one of my weaknesses. So he's an amazing leader. And I'm not saying I'm a bad leader, but I mean, like, he never even put an ad up to hire people for his float spa and no one ever left. People are just so attracted to Ryan. He had been doing more like Instagram stuff. He'd become really good on camera. People just love Ryan, the people side of things. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not horrible at it, but it's not my thing. I'm the product guy, right? I'm playing with toys, and Ryan's more like rallying humans and the culture side of things. And the relationships he builds are priceless at this company.
It was fun. We saw this kind of all hands meeting out front, and he's handing out, you know, like $100 gift cards to Target. That's fun. And crowds goes wild, and like, you know, Edward Cinema movie tickets. And then, you know, he walks away with three tacos. I mean, he's just like among the people. Yeah. Like, he's like one of them.
Yeah, yeah.
That's magic.
Yeah, internally here, it's our culture is amazing. And the relationships we have with our kind of influencers and people like that, that's part of the story we'll get to. But it's massive. Like, you know, for anyone listening, like, the relationships you build, like, you know, even the relationships we built with our float center community, that was the genesis of Plunge, right? We didn't get to Plunge from nothing.
That was that was our first customers. Yeah. They were the first people that made a jump with these two guys out of a garage that would sell a product. Mm-hmm. And to kind of piggyback on your statement of like the beginning was really hard for me because it was me in a garage supporting him building the tub. Like, I'm cutting PVC, I'm gluing things together, and he's building this tub. And that was like so outside of my comfort zone. You know, the strengths weren't at work. And I remember having days of just like, you know, I owned my own business somewhere else. And now I'm Santa's helper in the garage.
Yeah. I saw where it was going, but
I believed it. I was like, I got to get through this.
But Mike's like, can you go get us some more PVC, dude? Like,
Exactly. There was a funny one. I remember, you probably don't remember this. There was working late one night, we're at his house. So he goes in to have dinner with his wife, and you had given me one task to like literally measure something and cut something. And I had just been defeated all day. I couldn't do it right. And so outside my comfort zone. And I was afraid to go in and ask you for an hour. You came back like, what'd you do? And I was like, I did nothing. And I like literally almost broke down. And Mike just sat with me and was like, you know, it was way overblown in my head, but it was like boiling up. And I get emotional thinking about it. Mike was just like, it's hard. Like, he totally didn't belittle me. It was just like, this is a totally outside your comfort zone right
Empathy
now.
Empathy moment.
Totally. Yeah. It was like, and that was a big support from like a co-founder. Like, dude, we're going to get through this. We're a month away. You know, we're going to make a hire. We're going to do this. And you're going to get in front of customers. And you're going to, you know. And so I remember that night just sitting there like, I am pathetic. Like, I don't know how to cut this or measure this correctly.
Yeah.
And it was the most simple task that our whole team out there can do right now.
Yeah. But, you know, it's a good point. It's like sometimes you feel like this fish out of water, you know, and like you don't belong or it's not your thing. And, you know, it just becomes this giant block, right? And you freeze or you get in that like aim, and you never end up firing and you get stuck. Mm-hmm. I think that's what stuck looks like.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, speaking of stuck, like I have like CAD models from, you know, July of 2020 where I was designing basically our Plunge all in one beautiful unit. That's like always been the vision, right? Like the hot tub that's cold plunge, but even more beautiful. Mm-hmm. And I was talking to engineering firms. I was thinking about doing a Kickstarter and it was just like, this is way too hard. Like, let's just build something that works and sell it and get going. And I think you pushed me away from Kickstarter. You're like, let's just sell 20. Like, it was something really manageable. I always tend to think like almost too big sometimes.
Yeah.
And like Ryan, something I admired about Ryan, even with the Float Center, was like he would do these partnerships with like small organizations, like local small organizations, and just be like, cool, like we're going to do one of these every quarter or whatever. And you would just like the consistency of like the base hit and the double. And I was like, home run or nothing. I would swing and miss. And sometimes I hit, you know, we had like Steph Curry come to Reboot and do a big thing. Mm-hmm. And we've had a lot of big influencers, but I felt like there's a good dynamic there too, where I'm always trying to hit the grand slam and Ryan's like very consistent and more like realistic.
Yeah. That's another super good lesson. I mean, I've been there before too. Like you try and take on too much, it becomes overwhelming. Mm-hmm. And then again, you're in this analysis paralysis or, you know, you end up quitting. That's a really great lesson that can be, I think, applied to everyone. I mean, there's the saying, right? It's kind of weird, but it's like, how do you eat an elephant, you know, mm-hmm. one bite at a time? Mm-hmm. Or the journey of 1,000 miles starts at the very first step. And that's what a lot of these experts, you know, people have written books like James Clear with that book, Atomic Habits. Mm-hmm. That's what the whole book is about. You know, spoiler alert, if you haven't read it, it's like breaking down large tasks into small little wins. And a lot of the best people who are talking about goal setting and accomplishing goals, they said, set a goal, like this, like shoot for the stars, hit the mountain thing is bullshit. Mm-hmm. Like that doesn't work most of the time. You know, set little goals that you know that you'll be able to attain mm-hmm. and like start to get those mental wins, because when you get the wind in your sails and like you get the momentum,
yes.
the momentum, having, you know, banking those little successes, mm-hmm. little victories is what, you know, how you get the things really rolling
and, I think that's,
and ramped up.
That's a key thing from like pure startup mode when you're going. It's like the horizon needs to be so short that you're looking out on. It's literally, what am I doing tomorrow? What am I doing the next day? It's like, as you grow, like now we're planning out we're probably on a real 12 month, like real planning, maybe 24 looking at, but it's like, that would have been comical day one. It was like, literally, what are we doing tomorrow? What do we do? And then it got to a point of like, oh, we need to plan a week ahead. Like we're thinking a week, you know, and it just naturally will come. But I think the key thing in like startup is like A to B. Like,
yeah.
Like,
well, it's a little bit of genius too, because I also see, you know, having done 500 plus of these interviews with all kinds of startups, I hear the other side of that story, which is, you know, we spent, you know, $300,000 to build, you know, make a die, you know, like mm-hmm. to build a mold. mm-hmm. And then we like created the minimum 10,000 samples for our first run. We had a minimum run and then we went to market. Turns out no one wanted it.
Yeah. Or it has an issue. Like that's a classic Kickstarter story.
Yeah. 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 So like to your points, like let's just prove the model. Like, can we sell 10? Can we sell 20? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, then you start building. That's a really smart lesson. I love that.
Yeah. I think it's been, like, we made some good decisions. We've made a lot of bad decisions, but it's like we had product market fit very early. And that is a lot easier to solve those problems mm-hmm. than solving, how do I get the world to want this? And so it's like, we figured that out very quickly. Like, oh, there's a demand for this. Now let's build off of this. Mm-hmm. We knew we had the right product. Now it's how to optimize the product, how to build the infrastructure to support this product. But I think that's the key, is like, sometimes we get ahead of our skis and we think this product's ready, as opposed to how do you create a situation where you can actually prove real quickly, low cost, kind of low effort, like, does this product make sense in the market? I think that was kind of our win in the first like probably 60 days mm-hmm. of the company.
Now, I know a little bit of the story just because we've talked offline and I've heard a couple of other stories from friends, but like I want to hear from you guys. So you made those 10 units and then you probably made a few more. What was the go-to-market strategy? So if Kickstarter wasn't it.
Mm-hmm. We did our own little mini Kickstarter. We shot a video
yep.
with a guy Ryan had worked with, formed a great relationship. For a pretty small fee. He had drones.
What was that,
like
$600?
Dude, it was like $800. And he had drones. We had our buddy's house.
Who had a beautiful home. Yep.
And so, you know, we had the studio basically there, put the plunge there, and we shot a little video. Me and Ryan standing there, had the drone footage over the pool. And that was the whole hero video for our Shopify store.
Almost 2 years that ran.
Oh, yeah.
Our front of our website.
This looked legit. $800.
It was great.
Yeah.
So we ran that video and we did a campaign to our float centers. So that was like, we sent the email out to them, said, hey, this is what we've been working on over COVID. Who's interested?
Yeah. By the way, how many people on that list? What's that email list look like?
We probably had 20K.
Yeah, between like some, okay, between the locations.
Open rate of what? On 20, 30, 40%?
I have no clue.
So
we were not running that analytic at that time.
Yeah. Well, I'm just doing the math. Like,
but
okay,
strong open rate, like, because we weren't like peppering people with millions of emails.
Yeah, people wanted to be on the list.
Yeah, it was like, and it was an authentic message from each of us to our community. Like, hey, you know, I opened up on what I had been going through and kind of like, this is my new project. You know, I partnered with Mike. If you're interested, I would love to hand deliver to your house. Like, that was kind of the message. And we said that.
Yeah.
Because they were all in Northern California. He had a van that we could perfectly fit one plunge into, mm-hmm, and we would drive down. And so that was our first customers where we got sales. Mm-hmm. And that was, we literally built it, you know, we haven't raised any money. Like, we did this through the true like Apple stand. Like, you buy enough for, we bought enough for one plunge. We sold that. Now we got a little more money. We can buy two more plunges.
Yeah. And these retail for $3,000?
At the time, we raised, I think we-
three or four.
I think he sold three to those two before I came in. And then we came with a number of maybe 3,500 or 3,900, somewhere right in there. Then we really started to do the math into like, okay, if we build this company, this is not going to make any money.
Well, I was going to ask, how did you arrive at that price?
I was literally just looking at like the bill materials cost. And
okay.
Like, you know,
times so you're doing it the right
kind
way.
Of thing.
Okay.
Yeah. You
know, I mean, he had.
Then there was no labor. There was no overhead. You know, none of the other stuff was in there.
I would say there was like an intuitive nature of like 5K seemed to be, can we cut what's currently on the market in half? And there was some number, like I probably wasn't coming from the most logical way that he was extracting it, but I was like, 5K is really interesting. Can we do this for $4,990? And that it added up to that. Like, we could do that. So that was how we got there.
So you're looking at the competitors, seeing that they're, you know, up above 10K, and you thought we can come in at a sharper price. Not that you wanted to cut the knees out, but it's like, you had a different product offering.
I mean, 10K is a lot of money, you know, for people. Yeah. Like, 5K is kind of that number with like the firm financing. It's realistic for a lot of people to afford.
And I think the other piece to that too, we had foresight into, okay, this is 5K now. We're not going to be the only game in town. We understand this is going to be a growing industry.
Oh, you were thinking that already.
Yeah, someone's going to enter in, and I don't want them dictating us. Like, let's come at the price point that we think is really competitive, that we think is fair, and let everyone adapt to us. And that was part of the process.
I love price strategy. I loved it when I was in college. I love it now. You know, pricing is fascinating to me, and it will often speak volumes, like, you know, about your brand, your strategy. Like, you know, there's all kinds of pricing strategies, right? There's that skimming strategy where you start at the top and then you start skimming the price down. You know, Apple does this a lot with computers it's planned obsolescence, basically. You know, the computer that you bought 3 years ago is basically a doorstop now. It's not as fast, and then, you know, price elasticity or non-elasticity, which is like this idea, as I understand it, that, you know, how much will the market bear? You know, will they pay 10 grand for a tub? Obviously, you know, and then, you know, how much of that market, you know, on this board behind us, we sort of drew that, you know, demand curve where there's the early adopters and there's the next set, there's the mass and then the laggards. You have the early adopters, which are the, you know, small minority. They're willing to spend whatever. Doesn't matter. You know, it's about having it first. I think you guys are into that next set, which is, okay, the people have peeled the banana, you know, not eaten the peel. Now we see the fruit underneath. We're not to eat it. I'm looking for a sharper price, something that's more manageable. And you guys went in at that right price. And that seemed perfect for that slot.
Yeah, I think for me, whether it's product design or pricing, I try to create the product for myself.
Yeah.
Like, what would I want? You know what I mean? It's the only thing I actually know for sure. And so that's how I come at it from that perspective. And then now that there's a bunch of competition, you see a ton of the same SKU white labeled from two different places in China. And that price is out there, you know? And it's like, okay, well, we have a brand. We have, you know, which means people think we have quality. You know, over time, we have a great tech network and all this stuff. What is the premium that we can charge over the cheap white label thing? It's not 50%. I don't care what, you know, how great. We build a brand. It's not 50, but it's somewhere between, it's somewhere around like 20 to 25%. I feel like, you know what I mean? Like that's another way we're kind of looking at it these days.
There's a perceived value and like an actual value, you know, it's like, how do we make customer support that much better than if you go somewhere else? Your tub needs to get worked on. Is there a tech network that you can tap into without having to call all the local people? Is there, you know, is the product actually capable through an app that we own as opposed to some white labeled app that's clunky and, you know, having bugs? It's like, so all those things. And then it's like, yeah, what is the perceived value that someone would pay above that?
I always also try, we basically look for 45 to 50% gross margin. And it's like, if we can build a product, you know, for X, like, and it's, you know, 48% gross margin, great. Like we'll sell it for, we'll keep going down in price as we get more and more optimization within the company. As long as we're making that margin, like I'm not looking to sell it for 65% gross margin. It's like, we want to like meet customers where they are and just, you know, it's more exciting to sell, you know, 20,000 cold plunges and make X amount of money versus make the same amount and sell it to 5,000 people, right? Like there's just more people that are going to tell their friend about cold plunging. We're going to affect more lives. Like that just seems like a way more fun business to run.
Well, I think, you know, taking a step back, like that's a really important decision, brand decision you guys had to make. And I'm now seeing the evolution of how that happened because, you know, if you're Bentley, you're fine making a half a dozen, or if you're Ferrari, in fact, that's part of your brand. Mm-hmm. It's like, sorry, Mike, you actually can't get a Ferrari this year. Yeah. You have to wait.
Yeah, now I have FOMO.
You have to wait.
I want a Ferrari.
Yeah. Or, you know, sorry, Ryan, you know, you're going to have to wait in the Chanel line. Mm-hmm. If you want to go into the Chanel store, it's 75 deep right now.
Yeah.
And that's part of this part of the brand. But so how did you guys come about the name? How did you land on Plunge?
I always think about it from an SEO perspective, you know, and that was obvious, right? People are going to search for Plunge.
Is it obvious though? I mean, because cold bath.
Right, exactly. Ice bath versus cold plunge was the thing.
That was the convo we had at the early beginning. So we looked in coldplunge.com or just searching in cold plunge onto Google. Number one ranking thing was a sauna company that was transferring the domain over to a sauna company. It wasn't even a public domain. We knew in our friend group that cold plunge was the term. That's how we talked about it. You want to go cold plunging, you want to take a plunge. Like that was our vernacular. So we were like, okay, we're a core customer. That's ice bath was about 10x search on Google than what cold plunge was.
Yeah.
So we basically just made a decision. The only domain was thecoldplunge.com. We bought it for $10.
$10.
So you asked what our name was. Our name has been Plunge since day one.
Yeah.
There has been confusion, especially in our first probably year and a half, of everyone thought we were the Cold Plunge or Cold Plunge. And it's like, that wasn't our name. Our name was Plunge.
Yeah.
But it was what it was. It got us within, this is how the company really grew. Because in our first 4 weeks, we started a first page ranking on Google. And so if you typed in Cold Plunge, we were now suddenly appearing as this company.
Yeah.
So we're getting calls in the garage of people like, I've been looking for Cold Plunge for the last year and a half. I didn't know you guys existed. And I'm kind of playing off like, yeah, we're newer, even though it's like, I'm cutting PVC for Mike.
And you made five.
Exactly. Let me shoot you an invoice. And so we looked like we were larger.
Established
than what we were. A big part of that.
The video was sick.
Yeah, the video, the website.
I'm decent. So as like an entrepreneur, I do pride myself like on logo design, website design. I can make it look decent. You know, I'm not doing the website today. I can't do that. But like I can get us to like acceptable.
It's way above average.
Yeah, way above average.
And so that, like all that part of it, like we've taken a choice too as like a brand and a company. It's like, we really just call ourselves the thing.
Yeah.
Like our sauna is called the Plunge Sauna. Like, let's just make it very clear what you're buying, what the name is. And so we just thought there was this huge void into this term cold plunging.
And of the name, it was also like, we talked about this prior, like plunge is like a noun and a verb, which is cool. Like take the plunge, change your life is our saying, which literally means like get in a cold plunge, but it also means like do the hard thing. Do the thing you don't want to do, right? Yeah. Screw it. Throw your hat over the fence. Start the thing. Like that's something we really believe in.
Plunge into life. It's
your Nike, just do it.
And it was a little bit of a void. Like plunge typically has been like a word no one would want to touch, like plunger, like, oh, the stock market just plunged, you know? So it was kind of a blue ocean in just the word space.
Yeah. I love that you bought it for $10 though, because
paid a bit more for plunge.com.
Now we have plunge.com, and that was
a $250,000 for plunge.com.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, still, like, I'm just thinking back. I had this conversation with Alex Hormozi when he bought acquisition.com, and we were talking, like, I remember there was an announcement. And by the way, you're in good company with, like, the iterations on the name, because remember, you know, Zuckerberg did the Facebook back in the day, and then, you know, he just shortened it to Facebook. So it's like, you know, same kind of process. But I remember, gosh, it's been like maybe 7-8 years ago, he bought FB.com. Someone had just like FB.com, and I think it was like $8 million. And Hormozi was like deciding whether to buy marketing.com or acquisition.com. And he was telling me the story of, like, you know, kind of what we do is more acquisition based. So I want to do acquisition. And he paid about that same amount of money for acquisition. Marketing.com was in the millions. So
we were making like very heartfelt videos for this guy who owned plunge.com. It was a New Orleans jazz band.
Okay.
And he was parked on it.
Plunge the band.
And he was on Facebook. And I was like, dude, 5K. And then it was like 10K. And I was like, God, Ryan, we don't have enough money, but like, let's just do 25K. Let's make it happen. And then
he disappeared for like a year and a half, 2 years. And then all of a sudden we get a broker that hits us up. And we go through the dance. But, you know, it's like domains are true real estate.
Yeah.
Like, it's an asset that you get to own.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a 6-letter word that, you know, is beachfront property. That there's only so much beachfront property, and we're able to get that. And, you know.
I think the big thing for me was, we don't have a trademark on the word plunge because it's too general. Mm-hmm. But since we own plunge.com, it kind of clarified everything. Like, mm-hmm. to me, that's like almost a trademark in itself.
Yeah. You've had some use of it in the market. It correlates exactly to your product. It, you know, it's almost like it does what it says it does. Mm-hmm. And then it has those beautiful connotations beyond that, which is kind of like, you know, your Nike, just do it. Mm-hmm. Like, take the plunge, go for it, change your life, transform. Mm-hmm. Really smart. So how do you see it? Like, what does the brand stand for?
I mean, we were talking a bit offline. We see it as like resilience, like doing the hard thing. Like a message that I like to get out is like, it's not, cold plunge is the act. Getting in the sauna is the act, but it's what you do with your life. Like, that's what we're about. We're about doing the epic thing. We're about, you know, building resilience. So you're out there living your ultimate life. And I think it's kind of been our North Star for every product. Like, is this actually helping a human build resilience? And, you know, our mission is make resilience mainstream. We've stated it, and something we're living into.
I think part of the brand is relatability and accessibility too. We talked about pricing already. Like, I think something we get a lot is like, we love how you guys are at that like affordable price point. And we're going to be leaning into that a lot, you know, over the next year or two. So that's definitely a core part of the brand. I look at like a Tesla Model 3 as like, you know, it's like the new Prius. Like, mm-hmm. you see them everywhere. All of a sudden, Model Y is the best-selling car in the world. Pretty affordable car, you know, but it also still is able to have that like cachet. Like, when people get a Tesla, they light up. They feel like they just bought, like you said, like a Mercedes or something like super luxurious.
It's a premium car and an affordable
market. People say you can't really do that, but it's like, no, like Tesla's done it. And that's kind of where we're trying to fit in that kind of luxury price matrix.
Mm-hmm. I would piggyback on that. The accessibility, it's like, that's a price point thing and also a messaging thing. Like, you know, I think the health and wellness world can get a little righteous sometimes. It's like kind of I do this holier, like it can come off that way.
Yeah.
And I think our big message is like, no, it is for everyone. Like,
yeah.
Most people say for brand, you can't be for everyone. I'm like, no, this is humanity. Everyone can, to some level, step in to challenging themselves and growing. That is just the part of being human. So it's like, we want our message to be approachable. You know, that we're not different than anyone.
Mm-hmm.
This is, there's an accessibility to the brand. And, you know, that's important for, you know, it starts with Mike and I and like how it bleeds to the whole team. And, you know, everything that we send out.
Yeah. Yeah. The physical side, the ice bath is like where it was, and now it's cold plunge. And the ice bath was after football practice or whatever, we get in ice, or athletes do ice baths.
Yeah.
And what more lights us up is the mental health side of things. And that's where everyone comes in. Everyone's got a brain. Everyone's got the stressful life. And that's the thing we see more the most with reviews, is how it lights people up. And it's that change your state, change your life kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So that's definitely part of the brand.
Yeah. I mean, I discovered cold plunging when I met Wim Hof, and I had my own little health journey that I was on. I happened to be getting really severe headaches all of a sudden, just out of the blue. And I couldn't figure it out. And I've told this story a lot on this podcast, so I won't go into too much detail. But suffice to say, as soon as I started, well, Wim suggested you go start with cold showers, you know, baby steps, crawl before you, mm-hmm. you walk and all that. So I started doing the cold showers, and I legitimately started feeling better. Mm-hmm. And it was difficult. Like, at first, I didn't want to crank that over, but like, he's like, Brian, it's like mind over matter. You have to tell yourself, like, ignore, you know, your thoughts, don't listen to yourself, like, just do it. And when you don't want to do it, then you crank it. And mm-hmm. and the more you do it, the easier it'll get to do it. And that was true. And then I was actually seeing real results. Like, not only was I becoming more mentally resilient, I was seeing that in other places, but like, my body was becoming more accustomed to the cold. And so I wasn't feeling cold all the time, or mm-hmm. I was, you know, not getting sick as often. Totally. I was like, wow, there's some real science to this. Totally. And then I was like, oh, now I need to level up. I need to start actually cold plunging. And that's when I really started investigating the space. And that's when I found Huberman, and I found, you know, Peter Attia, and I found all these, you know, people who were experts, you know, in science or medicine, who had legitimate, you know, like, facts to back this mm-hmm. up. Mm-hmm. And I was in, you know, I was all in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think what I hear there is like this, like, two things, like the amount of days it takes to make a habit. And then also almost like the marshmallow test.
Yeah.
Right. Where you did that enough times to turn it to cold, that you started associating turning it to cold to how you feel after, rather than how you feel in the moment. Cause the first moment sucks, and it sucks every morning.
Yeah.
But the moment you get out feels amazing. And yeah. You have to just like force it the first number of times, but you do it enough. And then you start looking forward to it. You're like, oh, I can't wait to cold plunge, because I know when I get out, I'm going to feel so much better.
And you know what the irony, or, you know, the magic is? It's like, you can't fake being good at pull-ups. You just actually got to do pull-ups sure. mm-hmm. to get good at them. The same thing about cold plunging. Like, you can't fake being good at it. No one really wants to get in. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe some people do, like Goggins or someone. But it's like, most of us don't want to do it. But it's like, the unlock is, once you do it, you become, you know, it's like calluses built up. You get this resilience, like, you get better at it. And it's the only way to get better at it mm-hmm. is to push through. And I think that's the unlock. That's the transformation that happens, not only from like a health standpoint. That's what I experienced personally. And my headaches, by the way, you know, it turned out that, you know, it was a combination of poor sleep, nutrition, and lack of electrolytes, mm-hmm. you know, long story short. But like, that cold therapy it really jump-started everything, because I started reducing the amount of headaches I got just by jumping in the cold water by about 50% right away. And then when I figured out how to fix my sleep, and I got my nutrition dialed in, and then, yeah, I actually got my fitness routine back in order. But the cold therapy was part of that. It's like, all that dialed is like, pretty much eliminated everything. So
the headaches is an interesting one. It's like, it's actually something I've been focusing on more like the last 6 months. I don't get a ton of headaches. Those that I have, I've gotten in the cold, and it is like, if I was putting it up there for like cures of something,
yeah,
the headache front is like the biggest one to me.
It's real, right?
You go under the water, especially if you go under for 3 seconds,
your whole head,
you get this like intensity to the head, and then it just like subsides.
Yeah.
And that goes to like, if your headache from an immune system thing, or a hangover.
Hangover,
like,
yes.
Hangover, you get them. You have one extra drink that you are waking up sluggish, get in the cold. It is one of the greatest things you can be doing.
Yeah, yeah. Another little hack too that I figured out is, and I think I've heard this, you know, smart doctors talk about this too, but you could also just put your extremities in. If you like just dip your hands up to your wrists in, and you know, if it's like between 39 and 49 degrees, that's cold enough.
Oh yeah.
And you put it in there for 3 or 4 minutes.
Oh sure.
That headache's going to go right away. Or you dunk your head only if, you know, if you don't want to get your whole body in, yeah, just dunk your head. But it's like, yeah, that cold is real. Like it, mm-hmm, it knocks that headache right out.
No, it's medicine.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Okay. So you land the name. We understand what the brand is about. Who's it for? Like, so what's changed between like year one and now year three? It's just so crazy to think it's only like, you know, like 48, you know, less than 48, 36 months. It's like,
about 40, keeping, 41 months right now.
Keeping track of a little kid. You know, you're just totally, in terms of months, you're 36 months old. How's the customer changed? Because I think maybe some perception is like, oh, this is just for gym bros.
I think it's a lot of this community, like entrepreneurs, like people who are trying to up level and like take the next step. Like it's the ultimate like table stakes for entrepreneurs, I feel like, these days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think that's it. It's like we have our age demos of who kind of fits the most predominantly in it. Like, you know, 35, 55 year old male tends to be the dominant figure, but we're also seeing a lot more women get involved into it. We're seeing, you know, and I think that's an interesting one, is like more studies for women coming into play into how it's impacting their body, because it is different than men, like into temperatures. And I think education on that front's kind of an opportunity. A lot of it's been focused around the male. There's a lot of for women to understand how to cold plunge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've heard a lot about like addressing autoimmune issues, which a lot of women wrestle with. I've heard about, both for men and women, this idea of, you know, burning brown fat, which, mm-hmm, I don't really understand, but it's like, apparently that's the fat that you want to burn.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great way to help lose weight or help speed up that process, whether it's, I don't know the science behind it, but it seems to be a fact.
Anything inflammation related is like, I mean, total game changer. That's what I saw with cryotherapy early on before we even opened. Just people who are going to these places every day, like solving anything inflammation related, which is the autoimmune stuff for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I think the messaging we have, it's still this way a lot too. We get a lot of people that purchase it for a recovery standpoint. I'm going to get it. It's going to help me with my weekend warrior. I can recover quicker, work out harder. Very quickly, that becomes like a lower item on the list. And it's like, oh, I just feel happier. My mood is better. My energy is better. It's like, that's the first. And so it's, to me, that's like, as more messaging gets clear there and we get better at telling that story and like studies, even from a scientific lens, come out on that front, it's like, that will be the core customer. This is a mental health tool at the end of the day that just so happens it helps with your recovery. Like it helps in these other areas, but first and foremost, if you're human, this is a mental health tool. And that is really, I think, the pivot into like how this product is, you know, understood by the world.
Yeah. Again, that resonates with me. Like where I'm at now, my protocols, like sometimes, so I'll do my fitness, like strength training in the morning. And I've been way better than I used to be about going to the gym 4, 5, 6 days a week. And you know, just do strength training, weights and stuff. But like now I went to cold plunge before I go to the gym to sort of like, instead of pre-workout, it just, I get a boost of energy. It's like I'm awake.
Yeah.
I'm ready to go.
Yep. Yep.
And then I'll go get my pump on. And then I'll sit in the sauna now, mm-hmm, for recovery. But it's like, I do it pre-workout.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Totally. That's becoming like that's like the new thing.
Yeah.
Is like how to utilize that.
If you're doing like linear movements, like even like weight training is good cold, but if you're going to do dynamic stuff, that's when you want to do heat.
Mm-hmm.
Right, because that's going to loosen you up.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the distinction.
And like I've been trying to become a better runner because I don't love running yet. But so one of the things I do for cardio is either like pick up basketball or I've been playing a lot more tennis. And so like post tennis, because I'll, you know, play really hard, or post pick up basketball, then I'll jump in the plunge because I want the inflammation, because I'm not muscle building, right? So I don't care if, you know, there's
any stunt of,
yeah. Yeah. But like, I'm basically trying to cure, whether it's knees or ankles or hips, like I want to get in the cold for the anti-inflammatory benefits. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I'll even stay in there for 10 minutes, just lower waist. You know, like I won't even dip up to my neck. It's just really to cure the hips, knees, and ankles after like a strong basketball game. And I'll get out of that thing after 10 minutes and I'll feel like, all right, I'm like 75, 80% recovered. And I'll be good to go maybe in a day and a half, you know? And I've seen a ton of benefits from that.
Yeah. After a workout, it's like, you call it candy.
Yeah.
It's like, that's the easiest plunge.
Yeah.
Your heart rate's up. Your core temperature's up.
Sweaty. It's
like, can I just dive into this thing?
Like, that's all I am. Like, I do my cardio, my run. It's like, I'm literally sprinting home to strip down, to hop in the plunge. And then it's just like, you know, bliss at that moment. And you're right. It does speed up. I don't feel super lethargic after the run. My knees aren't as achy as they were leading up to getting into the water. It just accelerates the whole process. I think from a cardio standpoint, cold after is game changer.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like I played high school sports, played football, baseball, played soccer, wrestled a little bit, but you know, I was a 3-sport athlete. And you know, that's what we used to ice our elbows, ice our ankles, all that after. It's the same technology, right? It's just the experience is a lot better now.
Totally. Yeah. It's education now. And that was like, how much can you suffer through it? Now it's like, how much can you surrender into a plunge?
Totally.
People are recognizing, learning how to breathe and how to be calm in a stressful environment. Cause that's really the goal. You don't want to get in the cold. And you can always tell a first timer when they're like, I went 10 minutes. And it's like, well, tell me how calm you were. Where did your heart rate go?
Right.
Like, you know, were you able to let go? Like, and so that's, you know, that's the signal that you're trying to send while you get into this fight or flight scenario.
Yeah. And that's the Wim Hof coming back into it, right? The whole, like he pioneered that whole breathing technique. He's the master at that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like a dual, like there's breath outside, getting in. I mean, if you focus on your breath in there and elongating it and calming yourself down, it will teach you how to breathe. Mm-hmm. It will teach you how to regulate yourself in a stressful environment.
Yeah. So let's pivot to, okay, so you got the name, you started creating these units, you saw some success. Tell the Shark Tank story. I want to hear that.
We were at CrossFit Games.
2021.
2021 company was 10 months old. It's like July.
And what were the gross revenue about then?
We had just done, so we had actually done 750K that month.
Sales
in July. I remember that. I just thought that was like the largest number. I was just like, this is, you know, we've been growing. It was to show like this. I remember we went to the CrossFit Games. That was a big throw our hat over the moment fence. Like we ended up shipping 10 units out to it. We took our whole team went out to it. Like to put in perspective of what our size was, it was like we had to bring like our head of partnerships now, Adam. We had to like contract. He was like a yoga teacher. We're like, hey, you want to come like out to the CrossFit Games?
Yeah.
So anyways, we went to the games and Shark Tank emailed us and said, hey, you guys interested?
What was this? Was it in Carson? Where's it at?
Sony Studios in...
No, the CrossFit Games that year.
Oh, no, that was in Wisconsin.
Oh, Wisconsin. Okay.
Yeah. We get the email. It wasn't on our radar. Of course, we looked at each other like, yeah, this is interesting. Took a phone call from the car. We had to go like get into a quiet car. And it was more, hey, do you guys want to apply? You guys are interesting.
Wait, back up. So maybe I spaced out. How did Shark Tank find out about you guys?
No clue.
Okay. So anonymous.
So.
Someone's bird dogging
you. They have people.
I think they were searching interesting companies. We were kind of becoming.
We were out there on Instagram, you know, like we skipped over like our whole, like how we got to 700K was through influencer marketing.
You know, with Shervin and Nyjah and Tony Hawk Rich and Roll. Andrew Hogerman, Rich Roll. Like we were down at their homes delivering these units. That was the game. Like not even the game. We just built this relationship. We'd show up, drop in with Rich for 2 hours and have a great talk. And then Rich would be, we'd be like, hey, do you have a friend that's interested? And you know, Rich has friends that are interesting, amazing people. Mm-hmm. And we would end up at their house. And so that was our strategy.
White glove.
Totally.
Yeah.
The owner showing up. You know, so that was like really what the first, we've sophisticated the strategy, but the first 7 months was that we rented 3 different U-Haul trips down to LA. And that was, you know, so I think for Shark Tank, they got wind of that. They were seeing it.
They got people.
Yeah.
They got eyes. Yeah.
Exactly. They.
Yeah. So we were working with some producers, refined our pitch. We rented an Airbnb one night and just like practiced our pitch back and forth. And then within a month, we were in, you know.
6 weeks from that first phone call to we were down at the studio.
We did a million in August, right? In sales. Didn't we do a million?
Yeah, I remember that because I remember we were able to say that on the show.
Exactly.
And it was felt like
they're all like, whoa,
powerful congrats. Thing. Like
for them to acknowledge us felt so good.
Yeah, it was, you know, so we had because we had the plunge set up, which was like a whole process to get a plunge on stage.
Right.
We had to ship two down because they have to turn the set over. You know all about this. And but we had to get the water cold enough for Robert to actually have an experience.
Yeah.
It takes X hours to cool it down. So we had one tub that was already cold. We jerry-rigged a hose line and pumped the water back into the new unit.
Okay.
So when we went on set, so Robert was actually in cold water. Mm-hmm. And we had the, you know, it was everything you would think what Shark Tank is. It was this.
For people who don't know, let's break that down. So it was Robert, it was Kevin, Mark,
Lori, and Barbara.
And Barbara. Okay, so it's the core five.
Which
the dream team.
To your point of why we think they thought us, they found us. We thought the whole time leading up, Kevin Hart was going to be our shark.
Oh, okay.
To the point that we had our pitch ready for Kevin because Kevin had that Cold as Balls series.
Yeah,
that's why we thought they reached out to us. It leaked that Kevin was the guest shark that season.
Oh, so
we were like, oh, no brainer. This is Kevin Hart.
Yeah.
So we did research on him.
Yeah.
We had a whole pitch into like his nonprofit that we were going to donate money to. And then it's like, right, we were the second set of that day. And the first team's coming back and we're at the trailers and we're like, Kevin's there? Like, no, it's not Kevin. We're like, oh, shit, this is like curveball. Like,
call the audible, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how long was your pitch? So, you know, a lot of people don't know. I mean, that show's amazing. It's amazing it's gone on so long, but like those pitches can be, I mean, at least 45 minutes, sometimes 2 hours.
Yeah, it was 45 minutes, I think we were up there.
45.
They don't know anything about your company. Nothing, right? And we knew he was going to get into the cold plunge. So that was cool. We knew that was going to happen. And that was really fun, right?
Oh, it was predetermined that Robert was going to get in? Okay,
From an early point. That's just good TV. Like, why not do that? Robert's always the guy who tries the thing, right?
So, I don't know what Robert knew, whether it was just like, hey, you're getting in your bathing suit or get ready. Like, I don't quite know what they told him. I'm not aware. But everything else was unknown.
Yeah. And it's true. I have been behind the scenes, you know, like talking with the producer, Clay, and, you know, the director.
Yeah.
It's amazing. They have all these cameras and they have a director calling like, go camera two, go camera six. And they have, you know, sometimes they're in their ear, the ear
of the sharks. Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. Like ramp up the, the insults or, you know, whatever. But you're right. They don't know anything about it.
Yeah. It's very authentic.
Yeah.
I think is how it felt to us.
For sure.
You know, you walk in, they show you the mark when no one's there and like, okay, cool. You know where you're going to stand. And then you wait for a half hour.
And the doors open.
And then they sit you in front of the doors and the guy's like, all right, quiet on the set. And they're like, cool guys. When the doors open, you walk through, you hit your mark, do your pitch, and then we're live. So don't screw it up.
Yeah.
So we're like, okay, cool. We're sitting there like fist bump and like, we're just standing and standing and I'm like, you know, the adrenaline is just like pumping, dude.
Yeah.
You're in front of the doors in Shark Tank.
The iconic hallway. You know, it's like you're right there in an air hangar that's massive. That was like a city. Now all of a sudden it's dead quiet.
Yeah, dead quiet. And I'm just like, I'm going to go through my lines and say it in my head. My mind is blank.
It gets real.
Like I could not think of my name. And like... And then I just go to, oh my God, okay, cool. I knew it. You're going to fail on national TV, Mike. I always knew you were a failure. You're faking it. You think you got this company? You know, like the total adrenaline is just wild.
Yeah, imposter syndrome.
And then there's like a whisper that's like, dude, just have fun.
Yeah.
Like that's been our secret this entire time is just have fun because it takes all the pressure off and you actually perform your best when you're having fun.
Yeah.
And so I gave Ryan a hug and I'm like, buddy, let's just have fun. He's like, yeah. And then I just started dancing because I'm just like, how can I channel this fun? And all of a sudden the lines come back, the doors open, we walk out, we strut it out, hit our lines.
It was comical. Like I mean, Mike was literally hands above the stage manager's kind of looking at him like, these guys, like, what are these guys about? Mike's 6'6". You probably can't tell standing here. So it's this huge human just like dancing like that. I look over at him like, whatever he's going through right now, I don't know. And then it was like, dun-dun-dun, and you walk out. Yeah. But yeah, it was 45 minutes. We were out there.
Who were you hoping would give you an offer?
Well, beginning was Kevin.
Yeah, of course.
This fake shark. You know, and then I think where we were hovering was like, we knew Robert would be interested. He's getting in the water. He gets to actually experience the product.
Yeah.
And then Mark, you know, from an interesting strategic standpoint from the sports, just us admiring Mark and what he had done.
Yeah. Poor Robert. I mean, he always like is kind of like the stepchild, right? Like he's always kind of like on the outs. I mean, you know, Robert's got some money and he's smart, but like he's always, I don't know. He just seems like he's on the fringe all the time.
I love Robert. Robert was great.
Like, I love Robert too.
Yeah.
But like his brand is like, you know, is it you want Mark Cuban or you want Robert? You know, it's always like, oh, I'll take Mark. You know,
yeah, everyone wants Mark. Yeah. Everyone wants Mark.
Yeah. I mean, Mark's.
It was, so we're up there. Everyone's very impressed. I mean, the numbers are pretty wild, you know, and.
Well, did Barbara want it? I mean, Barbara usually doesn't want it.
Everyone offered something.
Except Lori. Lori was out. She was very, just like, it was outside of her.
Can't sell it on QVC. So
exactly. Yeah. It was.
The offers were, you know, Mr. Wonderful basically knew what he was going to do and knew I was a no. It's his
royalty deal that I had no clue how to understand. He was getting all his money back first.
Yeah.
I didn't grasp it.
Yeah.
He's a savage, and he likes to loan out money, like 7 or 8% or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. And then Mark's offer was, I still don't even know if it was a good offer. He's like, I'll pay all your POs, but then once you get the money back, I get the money first, and then you get. And I was like, okay. I was like, can we discuss? Because like this is offer from Mark, and it was a decent offer. And I was like, Ryan, like, what? I don't understand Mark's offer. Do you understand Mark's offer? And he's like, no, not really. Should we ask him to clarify? He's like, yeah, let's ask him. We come back. Go, Mark, can you clarify your offer? And he basically was like, yeah, no problem, guys, no problem. And he's like, well, here's the thing. I'm going to pay your POs first. I'm going to finance the POs. But then when you get the money back, I get repaid first. And we're just like, still don't really know if that's good for us.
Yeah, is it like, are you playing bank? Like, do we actually ever make money? Like, yeah. And so we, you know, Mark gave us that deal. Then Robert came with his. And we had a threshold that morning. We actually changed the valuation 10 minutes before we walked out.
Oh, wow.
Because you can change it. They let you do it. And I remember our producer, because you basically have a producer that supports you and they support different companies going out. And we told him, we're getting our makeup done 10 minutes before, last touch-ups. We're like, hey, we're changing the valuation. And we were already a really high valuation. We were like a $20 million valuation, which is extremely high for a Shark Tank.
Yep.
And we raised it to 22. And he was just like, guys, this is crazy. He's like, Ryan, like when you say the number, because in my line, I said, we're asking for $1 million or $1.2 million for 5% of the company. And he was like, when you say that, just shut your mouth. He's like, because they are going to razz you so hard that you think you can come on this show and ask for that amount of money. So I was like, okay. Like I was kind of nervous, like, oh my God. And so of course the sharks are like, oh, I bet. Like, you know.
They do the math real fast. Oh, that's a $22 million valuation.
Like, let's get to the point here. Like how are you coming up with these numbers?
Yeah.
So, but that morning we said, because, you know, to your point with Clay and the whole show, they're very big into like, do not accept a deal that you would not do on the back end.
Yeah.
So they're very clear about that. And so we came to our numbers like, what's our drop dead deal that we would do?
And what was it?
It was 12%.
Okay.
So how the game works is the dollar amount that you say, you cannot go under. You have to leave with exactly that dollar amount or higher, but the percentage of equity gets played. So you start with a really low number, understanding that they're going to push that number up, but you have to walk out with, you know, we said 1.2 million. Which our final deal was, it came down, it was Robert said he would do 1.2 million for 12%. It was actually a showdown. It was 1.2 million for 15%. And then Robert said he would give us 1.2 million in a loan that we could pay back. So it was 2.4 million total, some equity, some as a credit. Mark was 1.2 million for 15% equity and 1.2 into, or just this deal of I'll pay all your POs, which we didn't quite understand. Like, what's the interest rate? What, like, how does this work? Yeah. There was no understanding.
He's just fronting the money. So you don't have to.
There were so many offers coming at us. And I was starting to like freeze up. I just wanted to get off stage.
Yeah. That's what the adrenaline part. So we're in this like psychedelic trip where adrenaline was great. And then it's wearing off. And now it's to a point of, oh, I have to get off this set and I don't know what I'm even discussing right now, but I'm on national television.
Yeah.
How do you get out of here? So long story short, Robert, they both said 15%. We that morning agreed if we get a 12% for the deal, we will do it. Mm-hmm. Turn to Mark. Mark, will you come down? Nope. Turn to Robert. Will you come down? He's like, I'll go 12%. I was like, my heart dropped. I was like, thank you.
Yeah.
Like, deal. Like, I just like looked back at Mark for 1 second. He said no. I was like, we're out. I didn't even look at Mike.
No, you didn't ask me.
I was just like, I don't care. We're out of here. Let's get off this set.
I was like, thank you, Ryan. Get me out of here.
Yeah. And we like limped our way off. And, you know, and they did say on that show, I thought was hilarious before. And I think it was the most truthful thing. Like, if you do not come off this set dead tired, you did this wrong.
Yeah.
And I was like, we're just going out there and talking business. I was exhausted.
Yeah,
post interviews, I was a zombie.
Oh my God.
They couldn't get me to even say anything correctly.
You just spent.
Yeah, spent. And so that was the Shark Tank experience and hell of a ride. One of the coolest things.
We were like the last episode of the season. We waited till like May to air from a September taping, right?
Correct.
And we were like, is this thing even going to hit? Because we were like, this is going to be big for the company. We got to build up. And then we finally got word like late April.
You get 2 weeks heads up.
Yeah,
that's it. 2 weeks heads up. And you don't even know if it's going to happen.
Yeah.
So we're building infrastructure. But
so tell the audience some more inside baseball on this. So after that happens, after you do the deal and after you get off the set, then usually you meet with each shark's attorney, basically, or their GM, and they go through the deal and they make sure that it's fair. And I've seen, because I sat down with Kevin's guy, I've seen, I don't know, 50% of those deals, like his person said, listen, I know you agreed to do this deal, but this is not a good deal for you. So we need to give you more equity back because, you know, Kevin can't run your company, but like if we take this much equity, you're going to be out of business in 2.5 years. And so I've seen the sharks give back equity, give back cash, restructure
Smart.
The deal,
yeah.
Or just cancel it, saying, I know you said yes, maybe you felt pressure, but like, this is not a good deal for you. So let's just call it a day, and then that quietly goes away. So I know the end of this story for you guys, but like, so great. So Robert is a big part of your company now, like, right? Like, this is how the story ends. Tell what happened.
Our books were garbage, I think, is the honest.
Yeah, it was, you know, so Robert didn't have a team on site. So we actually didn't hear from them for a little while.
Oh, interesting.
It's kind of, you know, Mark had the team. He was at the next trailer over.
Yeah.
So we're hitting them up like, hey, are we missing something? We want to make sure we're diligent here. And then we start going back and forth with his CFO and, you know, we're in the midst of trying to build this ship that's, you know, moving really, really quick.
Yeah.
Our books weren't to the level that they had a lot of questions.
Of course.
We weren't spending enough time to answer. And so ultimately we'd grown so much.
Yeah.
Like that value, like we ended up letting it go. And it just kind of dissipated, to be honest. Like the communication just kind of broke down, which
I was just annoyed with the guy. I was just like, I don't know the answer to these questions. Like, we don't even have like anyone in finance.
Yeah.
You know,
we're just two guys who started this like 24 months ago.
And leave me alone. Like, you want to give us the money or not?
Like, I'm dealing with a worker issue out here of getting these tubs shipped, let alone.
Yeah.
And, you know,
doing the thing.
Yeah.
So it ended up I think it didn't happen. We were in the New York Times like 10 months later. Then their team reached out. We're like, hey, did we miss an email? So they were like following up.
Wasn't Robert like kind of like celebrating, like I did this deal? He's kind of like promoting and all of this.
He did. It was great. It was awesome. He went on, I think it was Ellen. And he was with one of the Jonas Brothers.
Yeah.
And like the episode, because it was a great piece of television. Robert getting in a plunge.
Oh, yeah.
Squealing. And then he calmed himself down. It was awesome. It was incredible TV. Yeah. And so that became a thing for a few days in culture, especially in the media world. Well, Robert was like, I remember I was watching it. We had never talked to Robert since that date. And he turns to one of the Jonas Brothers. He's like, I got you. I'll get you a plunge.
Yeah.
And I was like, you don't like, as if he was part of the company. And I was like stoked. Like he was out repping us. And I was like, we never did it.
Yeah. He had no idea that his guy dropped the ball.
I don't know to what it was. I mean, maybe he was playing it up to just, you know, you're in this moment. Everyone wants to believe the deal happened. I mean, got bad love for Robert. It was cool. It was a funny moment.
I mean, I see the headline. It's like, best deal that never happened on Shark Tank. Honestly, like,
it's one of the, our valuation was actually one of the higher deals on the show. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, there's our company has grown a lot since then.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of reminds me of Jamie and the ring deal that all the sharks passed on, you know, the ring technology that yeah. Jamie developed and then ended up selling, I think, to Amazon.
Billion,
like
I believe.
Like $1 billion, yeah. And all the sharks are like, ah, oh, it's terrible. Like, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, same kind of thing. They missed this big opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, they all invested in this on the show. You know, I think Ring, did they pass on it?
They passed,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, they did put offers in the... Yeah. Mark's team reached out about a year later. You know, we're kind of like, hey, we're kicking ourselves for missing this. Are you guys interested? And we were kind of like, no, like, kindly, just like, we're not right now.
That ship has sailed.
Yeah, I can see both sides. Like, on one hand, it's like, hello, like, there's a blue ocean, a new modality that's, like, taking the world by storm, and it's like, this is huge. We're the leaders in the space, like... But then the other side's like, I mean, come on, are people really going to get in cold water? Everyone hates cold water. Like, that's why, like, every time we kept making these huge strides in growth, like, I'm looking around the corner, like, how big can this really get?
Totally.
You know, like.
Yeah, like, it's kind of like Robert should have known better because I think his wife is a dancer, right? Wasn't she like Dancing with the Stars?
Yeah.
He was into it, yeah.
And look, he invested on the show.
Right. Yeah.
I also say this, it was like, he had to cut a $2.5 million check. It's not nothing. Yeah. Like, you know, we talk about these, like, you know, I don't know Robert's exact net worth, but like, he has all these deals. Like, at the end of the day, you've got to cut. It's a lot of money. There were questions in our books that we weren't giving we didn't have the answers to.
Yeah.
All I knew is our company was growing and we haven't raised money and we're not putting money into this. So something's working right now.
Yeah. No, I imagine you're like any small business in America. I mean, if we take people to task, there's probably like a cardboard box somewhere in America with all these receipts in it from purchases and POs. It's like, that's what I imagine that your business was like. It's like, we're too busy doing the thing to like worry about the books and what's like, we couldn't do diligence. It's like, we're just in the thick of it. And so it's kind of like this perfect.
That was exactly it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was that. It was, we had brought Eric on. That was right. I was thinking our head of production came on a little bit after Shark Tank. Mm-hmm. Trying to think where we were at when Shark Tank aired as a company.
Well, the fact that it aired too is just, it's just like this poetic justice. It's like it was like meant to be like this fate, this good luck, you know?
We've had a lot of that.
Yeah. A lot of that. We, whether it's karma, luck, bit of everything.
This place we're in now, Eric used to work next door at Transpac, which is a big packaging company. We had hired a warehouse manager. And he didn't do so hot. But the first day, he brought in Eric. He was like, we need new packaging. Packaging has issues. And Eric was like, okay, you need 3x6 RSC. Okay, great. Like, and then like I would call Eric, hey, packaging. He'd pick up every time right away. Hey, Mike, how you doing? And it was just like this guy who was just so aces and like awesome. And when the warehouse guy didn't work out, I was like, Ryan, do you think Eric would like run the warehouse? And so we started talking to Eric, and Eric got us this space next to Transpac because he knew about it. We were outgrowing our current space tremendously. You know, now we have the whole building.
He convinced them. So the next door, it's kind of in this whole sauna combo that you and I had.
Yeah.
We decided to sublease 40,000 square feet here, which we thought was incredible for us.
Like, yeah, it's like Costco.
Yeah, I was like, dude, are we ever going to grow into this in about 5,000 square feet of office? And Eric found this deal. We were literally looking everywhere in Sacramento because we were outgrowing where we were at. It was bad. We had to get out. And there was nothing in Sacramento. Well, he found this deal. We move in. Fast forward now. That was May of 2021. You know, we're 2.5 years later. And we now have 200,000 square feet. Transpac is closed down. We hired their whole team to support our business. So we were like the little kids moving in here. Thank you for giving us 40,000 square feet. To now we took over all their wood shops because we launched Sauna out of here. And I remember walking through when I was interviewing, recruiting Eric. I went into his business. They didn't, because we were a client, so I could kind of go in and recruit him. They thought I was a customer. So the company wasn't like, what's this guy doing here? I remember walking through the halls I walked you guys through.
Mm-hmm.
I remember walking through and be like, this is my dream location for us to be in.
Yeah.
2 years later, this is our office. In this Sacramento, a 2.5 million person city region, we are back in the office that I walked through And it, you know, it's one of these full circle moments that's like, could have never predicted A to Z or A to whatever. Mm-hmm. It was just one step at a time. And then you end up, we're sitting in the office of like, where I recruited this guy to come over. Mm-hmm. And now we have the whole building.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, not getting too woo woo on all this, but it's like, you know, you have to have a vision first, right? You have to see it before it becomes something. You know, Mike saw it before you did. Mm-hmm. He saw this, you know, tub transform into this plunge, this brand. You came on board a little while later, but eventually you started seeing it. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the vision for this whole company, what it could become, you started, you know, what do you want to call that? Manifesting or like seeing the dream? I think, you know, you think of people like Walt Disney who looked at orange groves and saw this big amusement park, you know, or theme park. That's vision, you know, like what you guys are doing is not that different than seeing into the future, you know, creating your destiny, creating your own luck. You know, mm-hmm. sure, there's luck. Timing is everything, right? Sometimes it doesn't work out. Like when you're in the RV, that was not a great time, but like you were still like dreaming of what it could become, and then it became that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What I'm curious for you, what that was, like what you dreamed, what in this did you see?
I think I'm pretty good at seeing trends early, like with the float tank and cryo sauna thing and with cold plunging. But to be quite honest, I more saw just like, I see like the product and where the product's going. Mm-hmm. Everything else, before we launched Plunge, we actually were talking to a contract manufacturer to do all of the everything, all that stuff we do out there. Like that wasn't part of my vision. But once we found Eric, it was actually part of Eric's vision. Eric was like, guys, we're gonna do 1,000 a month soon. He's like looking at it,
which was crazy up into the right. Time.
Yeah. And I was like, I thought he was bananas.
And so you saw, yeah, and that makes sense. You saw the product, like the product we have now. It's like, yeah, I saw this into the future.
Yeah. I more saw it in people's homes, the number of people, it getting big. But the actual nuts and bolts of what we're doing today, I definitely didn't mm-hmm. see. But
I think that's another lesson, though. It's like we were talking off camera. You know, you have this new product. Are we calling it the Plunge Sauna?
So we have the Plunge Sauna and then, yeah, the Plunge Sauna.
Yeah. Yep. So you have this new, you know, product, the Plunge Sauna. It's a dry sauna. Mm-hmm. It's not red light, right?
Nope.
No.
It's a new category for you guys. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe the margins are not great today. And you basically... You know, a company went out of business. You hired their entire team, basically, to mm-hmm. cover their space. Like, you're the heroes of this story. Like, you know, you saved all these jobs, but like, you were just also very pragmatic. And it's like, wow, this is like fitting together really well. The timing and the fit, the expertise that people have to build these things, because they're, you know, they're all, you know, sanding wood and putting the thing together and shipping them out. Like that just all came together. But it's like, this is also the worst it's going to get mm-hmm. in terms of like revenue for you. And now it's the fun part because you're just going to find efficiencies. Like, how do we make it better, stronger, faster? How do we make it, you know, like even higher quality, but costs less? So you're going to find these what do they call it? Economies of scale, right? Mm-hmm. Like that's how it works. And so maybe it's a tough time for a new product launch, but it's also... Like the future looks great because it's only going to get better.
Totally. I mean, the internal, like you said, there's a margin dynamic and conversation. There's always that of knowing, okay, we're here today. We think we can get to here. You want to price it as the best we can. But then the exciting part with the sauna is like we've launched it and it succeeded our forecast. Like it's actually a new, again, product market fit. Like there is interest in this product. It's like, cool, that's core. We know that's there now. How do we do all the things you just talked about?
Yeah.
Which is probably what's keeping Micah and I up the most right now. Like, you know, that's our most of our convos right now into efficiencies, into our operations, into, you know, it's a pretty large operation, at least for what we're accustomed to. But it's also the fun part, like having that horizon and looking at how we can make it better.
And I also, we were talking offline too. I don't see it as a commodity. I don't see it as a product. It's like, cold is cold. I can fill my trash can up with a, you know, ice and put water into it. You know, it may not be as luxurious as getting into a cold plunge, or, you know, a plunge unit. But like, I can, cold is cold. I can do that. But it's the experience that sets it apart, right? And the brand that you're building around that, which is like all the support, all the other, you know, benefits that you guys are adding, backing it with science and all the other people who are coming on board to support. I see the sauna as the same thing. I can go to my gym, you know, I go to EOS in Southern California and I sit in my sauna, but it's a terrible experience. I got the guy that drinks too much water and he's got like a 5 gallon jug and he's just chugging it in front of me, spitting on the floor. Yeah. I got the old naked guy who walks in.
This is a terrible vision. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. I got the guy who puts his headphones on, listens to music and he's singing out loud. It's like the experience is terrible. Yeah. Like I love the sauna so much, but I'm only just dreaming of this much better experience where like I could have my own in my backyard and just like sit there in peace, either alone or with my girl, mm-hmm. you know, and just like, just do it the way I want to do it.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think that's what the opportunity is, right? It's not just like efficient or like convenient, but it's like the experience, mm-hmm. you know, that's what I want, you know, the experience.
Yeah. We got you.
So,
yeah.
So
I'm working on it.
So I'm excited for you guys because it's not just like this commodity product where you're going to compete on price.
What's exciting about this industry is there's a lot of like common sense stuff that we can do that's actually like, whoa, innovative. Like you can schedule your saunas so it turns on automatically at a certain time and date, or you can turn it on from anywhere. Like that stuff, it really doesn't happen in the sauna industry yet. Or just like the shape, like every sauna is either a cylinder or a box. We're like, why don't we make it not those things and think about the functionality of a sauna? Maybe we can lean the back a little bit. Maybe the benches flip up and you can have enough room to do some yoga in there. Like hot yoga is a thing. And we did all that and everyone's like, this is the greatest sauna I've ever seen. You know, and it's like, well, thanks. Like, I don't know. It's not like rocket science, but just trying to think from first principles of like, again, like what product do I want? Like, why not make something mm-hmm. novel? And
Can I have a sauna that I can work out in?
Yeah.
Like, can I turn it to 110 and actually have a good functional workout in a space? All things that we had a good balance with some designers that we worked with, that Mike and I were coming with all these ideas of like, that's what we want. I want a workout space. I want a comfortable sauna. I want a beautiful sauna. I want to run it from my phone.
I want to plug and play.
I want plug and play. Yeah. I want it modularized from the setup. All these things that we were, okay, why isn't that the case? Why is it this way? And these guys, you know, had practical answers to some of it. Like the ergonomic design was a challenge from an engineering standpoint. Like there's a reason it's been a box or a barrel. Yeah. Like there's an actual engineering dynamic. And so, but we were able to solve that. We're like, no, we're not just going to accept that that's just the way it has to be. So we had this good give and take with this group that we worked with, where Mike and I were coming in with kind of the pie in the sky ideas. And they were like, well, this is what's practical and actually have it. And there's a trade-off here. So that was a really fun process, like product, you know, creation that we went through.
We'll talk about this too, because this is a natural byproduct of doing well, which is now you're going to start to attract world-class talent. Mm-hmm. You know, you got a couple of guys who just like, you know, necessity is the mother of invention. You just started doing the thing. And, you know, maybe you weren't MIT engineering grad and, you know, you weren't Steve Jobs, you know, it's like, but now you're starting to attract like mm-hmm. world-class talent. Talk 100%. About that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's one of the most exciting things I have right now is, you know, it started out as like whoever we can get on the ship. Oh, you can work here. Come work here. We were just hiring as quick as we can.
Friends, you name it.
Now it's like, we're talking true, sometimes even international, but let's just say US nationwide searches for the top people of operations, of supply chain, of sales. Like, you know, and probably a year and a half ago, we're not attracting that. Like, oh, it's a little risky. I don't know where this is at. Now it's like, no, I see what's happening here.
Yeah.
You know, our head of operations, great, you know, he implemented Amazon's robotic system, like things like that, that are so beyond, you know, from a fulfillment standpoint and like processes. So that's what I'm like, you know, we've gotten it here, Mike and I with core team. And now it's like, we're really building a brain trust of like, where are we going to be in 12, 24 months from now?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Each of these people in their own lane is almost like a founder entrepreneur. It's like, you want to hire someone who can go run with it and just, dude, sorry, you're going to have to stand up all a supply chain. But also, you get to start from scratch and build it.
Fresh powder. Yeah.
It took us, we were looking for that ops position since like April or May of last year. Now, I ended up hiring someone who ended up quitting in 2 weeks, but the recruiter, he came on, this guy, and he had a recruiter he'd worked with for a long time, and he needed to hire some positions. So that recruiter, he left, but I ended up hitting up that recruiter and said, hey, can you find this guy's replacement? Mm-hmm. She went and found Chris. There's a lot of like similar to how we found Eric, just like looking at opportunities and different people that kind of come into your field or whatever. And
yeah, I think it's taken, like, I even go back to our first day. Our first look, we had to get out of his garage.
Bike shop.
You know, his wife was, you know, so kind of led us there and was kind of like, guys, got to get out of here. Even his neighbors were like, guys, got to get out of this.
Yeah.
We were like, we got to get out of the shop. Well, we dropping that plunge off that night to a guy in Sacramento who happens to say, I have 500 square feet of in back of my bike shop. You guys want it? We're like, do you have a sink? He's like, yeah, great. So we moved into a back of a bike shop for 3 months. Like, it was, you know, it's always been these, like, you know, I think for us, it's like, how do we keep seizing the moment when it presents itself and being decisive in that moment and be like, cool, take action and go. Mm-hmm. And that's been, you know, I think a strength of the company thus far.
So there it is right there. Let's come back kind of full circle to brand. So, you know, you are the, you know, among the Ferraris of cold plunge brands, but at the same time, you're not pushing people away or making it too difficult. The barriers to entry are low, not high. And you're not building higher walls. You're building alternate routes to get people what they ultimately want, which is not the thing. Like, the thing is just the mode by which you unlock, you know, your inner strength, your inner power, right? It's just the tool to get you there. The real power is already in you. It's just not unlocked yet.
Totally. It's a modality to support that process. It's like, yeah, I mean, cold plunge is not the silver bullet. Sauna is not the silver bullet. It is a tool to do these things. What we're getting more excited on is like, what are you doing with your life? Who are you as a person? What's your excitement for life? That's what we're, you know, that's what these tools are actually supporting.
I mean, we were just sitting back, you know, chopping it up, reminiscing about the good old days and all that, you know, tracking my roots, where I came from and where I'm going. But like I say, man, always said it, it's not about the destination. It's all about the journey. Ain't nothing changed but the weather.